Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Back to part two of Mark Hatley with The Big Interview. It's different kind of, different gravy this second half. This is Mark on the up, rather than being knocked down. This is Mark about scoring the winner in the Milan derby. AC Milan beating Inter for the first time in 6 years, and the madness that ensued. This is Baresi, young Maldini. This is facing down the Milan chairman, president, who refused to treat him properly, who refused to give him a house, who refused to honour his contract. How did Hatley resolve that? The same way as he approached the battle with the dandies Michael Watt on title day at Ibrox. Chin out, arms flailing, winning at any cost. The second part of Mark Hatley talks about the way in which he learned from a great favourite of mine, Nils Lidholm, one of the three Swedes at Milan in the 50s, the Grenoli trio, who scored so many goals, played historic football. But because time moves on, in many parts of Europe, they're almost forgotten. Well, Lidholm was Hatley's coach when he reached Milan, and Mark's description of the Swede is fascinating. Here is Mark Hatley on The Big Interview, part two. If you've enjoyed it, tell friends. Tell Inter Milan. Don't tell Michael Watt. But leave a review. And thanks for your support. Enjoy. So Simon didn't play in that tour. Famously, he got to warm up a lot. But he didn't. And but you did. And Mark, it was such a life-changing moment. And I think latterly it was always told that the reason you become a Rossoneri was that goal in Maracanã. Yeah, yeah. But it wasn't. What we're aware of, and anybody wants to find out more can read in Hitting the Mark, is that, I mean, really remarkably, Fabio Capello had either scouted you or seen you at the under-21 tournament, yeah, or the scouts had reported directly to him because he was involved in the youth setup at Milan. Yeah. And
the Primavera,
they used a pretty well-known, now departed, man that you played with at two clubs, mm-hmm, who managed you, mm-hmm, at QPR. Mm-hmm. They used Ray Wilkins as an intermediary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And from Pompey, you're going to Milanello.
Ray had signed, hadn't he, for Manchester United in the Easter for the summer.
So tell us about the first inklings you get and what it feels like when it's proposed to you that you're going to become an AC Milan footballer from the Division 2.
I think naivety played a lot in it, because I'm thinking, well, Portsmouth will be pleased. right? Because I've still got 2 years left. I might get an extension onto that because of where we were going. That's how I was thinking right then.
We'll use AC Milan to get a better deal at Portsmouth.
This is how naive I was then. You know, I didn't think Portsmouth would let me go.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking of the money that, I think, what was it, 190,000 or something?
To sign from Coventry.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking, well, I'm still good for a couple of two, three seasons with Portsmouth. And as I say, Ray then knocked on the door. The first I was aware was like 2 days afterwards.
And after Ray, Maracanã?
Yeah, after the Maracanã. And I thought I must have been still drunk, you know, because Ray came in and he just... He said, I've had AC Milan on the phone and said, they want you to come and join them, you know. And I'm looking at Ray, right, seriously. Come on, Ray. Away. Have some water. He said, no, I'm serious. I said, well, I don't know what Portsmouth will be like with that. And party about it. But anyways, I left it, went training. And then he came back another 2 days after that. He said, the deal's been done. I went,
wow.
I said, wow? I said, well, I've not even spoke to the club. He said, the club have done a deal. I think it was 1.4 million or something.
10 times their initial investment.
Yeah. Which was a lot of money, a real lot of money back then. And I said, well, I've not spoke to them. So he said, well, you'll be leaving us right now. He said, Bobby's aware of it. So Bobby came to him and he just said, you're going to have to fly back and miss.
Now, I know it's AC Milan and it's going to prove to be a brilliant move, but that's a lot going on without your knowledge or say-so.
Absolutely, 100%. But that's how football was done back then. I fly back in, arrive at Heathrow. Dennis Roach, the super agent at the time, he collected me and we went to this big house, country house, right by Heathrow Airport. And we sat in there for a day, literally a whole day, where we had the sporting director over. We had, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 different officials from Milan's sporting director, all that sort of stuff. And we just went from room to room to room. It was not all sat in one room. It was a crazy setup. But Dennis came back to me and said, that's it, it's done. And I never even said to him, well, what? He said, I've got you the deal. We've got a great deal. I've got the kids sorted. We've got your house. We've got a car. We've got everything that I wouldn't even thought about. It was done. As I say, I flew in, and from day one till the day I left, it became a manic experience.
Manic for good and bad, I would think, because, you know, you're going... How to explain this, Mark, or how to set you up to explain it, because you played there. Serie A in those days was demanding and brutal and conservative, and
you had to have a technique to survive in that league. And I probably arrived with all the attributes of a British centre forward, physical, lots of energy, and the technique was not bad for a young player. But it was not good enough. It was not good enough to get me through an Italian league. It wasn't good enough. I had to improve pretty quickly.
One of the first things to explain to people was that they were still quite often using 5 at the back in the negative sense. Not the sense now where 5 at the back means that you might have 3 left with the 2 players wingers.
But you played with a sweeper.
Yeah. So that sweeper was part of the 4. Yes. So in other words, you had a 3 in the middle to play against.
Yeah.
Your sweeper was either in behind the centre-half or in front of.
Yes,
but it was a negative thing,
right? It was a negative thing. And I had a cast to a colleague and friend of Ian Rush when he went to Juventus. And, you know, you look at how Ian Rush used to play the game at Liverpool. He used to nip off the back of a centre-half. And that's why it was the Italian game was a problem for Ian, because of that sweeper.
That space was asphyxiated by the sweeper.
Yeah. So his strength was taken away from him straight away, of the Dalglish rush, you know, slip that ball in, one touch finish, bum, bum, bum. Where I had the physicality to be able to manoeuvre and manipulate, you know, people into areas where I wanted them, and that was a strength. But what I had to work on was the strength in holding the ball in, which Bobby Campbell told me was on about. And what they did, what Niels did initially when we trained, because he did things with me in the afternoon as well with Fabio, he put me in a box a box where I couldn't come out of across the pitch when we were playing in a small
What was
game.
Its dimensions?
Oh, I'm going to...
Vaguely.
Yeah, I'm going to say probably 4 metres. 4 metres by 12 metres.
So the 4 metres is depth and the 12 is width.
So you're literally talking goalposts and area. Yeah, so...
Bailey territory.
Yeah, so... On the edge, and it was the edge of the box. So there was no. It was a shorter game. The goals were brought up, and it was close up, right? So I couldn't come out the box, but players could come and tackle me in the box.
Okay.
Right. So I had to find the space in the box, in that box, to be able to get the ball.
It makes me think about like a lion in a jail. That's king of a small area, but so you have to dominate it.
Yeah.
It has to be your territory.
Yes, correct.
One of the things we have to do to help the listener. Is explain Niels. Now, I grew up loving the past, loving bizarre stories of football where heroic people that had just been before my birth and my awareness. And Grenoble Lee is a trio that I have always been utterly fascinated by because in a time when European footballers didn't move around a lot, i.e. the 50s, Gunnar Gren, Gunnar Nordahl and Niels Lidholm formed a trio
boys.
At Milan in 58 and scored between them for Milan, I mean, something like 400 goals.
Yeah.
They were unbelievably... Yeah. And they all played up front together.
Yeah.
And the one that we're honing in on is Niels Lidholm, who in his time coached Sweden, coached Roma, but at this stage, he's your coach, a Swedish ex-AC Milan striker who's now in
charge
of you.
So he'd been at the club before, so he knew the club.
Tell us about him, the man, the coach.
I'm going to say 6'3", 6'4". 64 probably at the time, and a man that had probably achieved everything he needed to achieve in football and in life. You know, he was that, you know, Scandinavian. He was so laid back. It was absolutely perfect for me because I'm sort of still, I was at that age where you're
in a hurry.
Yeah, in a hurry, wired to the moon. I couldn't sit down, needed to be doing something all the time. And he was a cooling influence to me. He would turn everybody in, and he would walk around the pitch with me. We'd walk around Milanello for 40 minutes, and he would just talk to me about everything or anything. What you're doing, how's your family, all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, with the experience that he had then, and his knowledge of the game of football, he said, I see whatever you want to be, you can do whatever you want to do. The first thing that in pre-season was the physical side of me. It was like heart monitors back then. You had that. They were so ahead of the game. It was like a half a horseshoe. It was like 150 metres and a 200 metre run, right? And you would do one, you would sort of jog back, you would do the other, and you would jog back, and you would do six of them in a pre-season. And my times would not drop. They would get quicker, and I could not understand where I was getting this.
Because the figures will go down.
Yeah, because you have the sport. Yeah, you have the fitness coach. The fitness coach was going,
look at this data.
Yeah, just a good old fashioned stopwatch. He said, because we was only doing three, right? So I did the three. The last one was the fastest. And he said, can you do another three for us? So I did three again. Literally, I'd had like a 5 minute rest because we'd finished. He said, could you do another three for me? And the other boys had gone away sort of stuff. So I said, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to do the 150 or do you want me to do the 200? I said, just do the 200, right? So I did the same again. And it was the third one was literally half a second slower than the first one. The sporting fitness coach is going, this is like, and this is all down to my dad not buying me a bike.
Tony, forgive him.
Yes.
So you're telling us that you had such inbuilt resistance, they call it now, not just pace, but stamina, resistance.
Yeah.
Did you know you were going to be able to perform at that level doing that exercise? Because that is famously the thing that footballers hate most.
No. Yeah, no, I didn't. I just didn't know, but I knew I could run. And so you've been running back from youth club with your boots on and your parka when you're 12 and you're 13 years old and you've got 3 miles to run. And I'd leave it later and later, as you do. You've got to be in by half past 10, you've got to be in by 10. And I believe in it, literally. 12 minutes to get
the 3 miles became a sprint.
Yeah, it became a sprint. So I was with a big parker on and all that sort of stuff.
The hoodie one that we all wore in the 70s. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And DM boots.
Oh, yeah. You Doc Martens on, all that, yeah.
Cool, we are children of the
city. By the way, this is a blast from the past. So, yeah, so that was my life all the time. This was chasing around after my pals on their bikes. I probably had to run 2 mile, 3 mile every time we used to play football. So I'm run. So I'm just like a running machine. So I had that ahead of everybody. It's just the rest of it I needed to put in place.
And Lidom wanted you to control that, so that you were only working in certain areas, the areas that mattered most to the team.
And I'll tell you this right now, and I think about it right now. You don't think about it then, all right? And he was telling me, you know, he said, I just want you to be, you know, playing the width of the goal. And this is why, you know. And he would take me in an afternoon with Fabio, right, put a load of cones down, have a goalkeeper. I mean, loads of cones on this pitch, and just walk me through. If the left back, we want you in this. So it's like there was like V's and Y's across the park in the areas I should be working, right, and not working. So the first thing he told me to do, I don't want you to tackle fullbacks. I remember going, well, that's what centre forwards do. So I'll explain why I don't want you to tackle the fullback. And this is, we're talking about, you know, the high press and all that, like the modern game.
Yeah.
This was back then. He said, because if you go out into that area, left-sided, right, that will stop our left-sided midfield player engaging high up the pitch. And in turn, will stop the left-back engaging high up the back. We want the game to be squashed, right? So we work hard, we win the ball back, and we're on the front foot. So back then, that's what they were wanting me to do. It's just work within the width of the penalty box, and that's all we want you to do. Right down like that, just like that. It was not like that, it was like that.
But most Italian sides that you faced under this regime wouldn't have played out via the centre-backs. Mm. So you would only have had to press when play was broken. It wasn't. You weren't pressing as they played out.
Yeah.
You might be pressing as their midfield hadn't got up.
Yeah,
you'd recycle it. It comes back to centre-half.
Yeah.
Then you go.
Yeah, and that would all be dictated by Franco on a whistle anyway. Because Franco just had one whistle. And he would come up a massive way.
This is Franco Baresi we're talking about.
Yeah. So he's got Costa Corta, who's a young player. He's in and out of Waito Como, back. Di Bartolome, the Roma captain, he was playing around that area. Great guy. And you got a young Tassotti. So soon as Franco gave this whistle, he would come marching up the pitch and stand from his sweeper role into like a defensive midfield role.
Yeah.
But everybody had to be in front of him.
Hold the line with him. If he goes.
But everybody had to go in front of him.
In front of him.
So he was still the sweeper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if, God forbid, if he would go absolutely mental. And that would be the sign of us all to go bump, 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 bump.
He was a trigger, and then you all acted.
Yeah,
so effectively, he was like the quarterback coach on the pitch when it was time to press, at least.
Yeah.
If he comes, then you must.
We're coming up. If we're coming up 3, 4, 5 metres with Franco, right, and everybody's coming up in front of him, everybody else has to do the same. Yeah, so.
And the opposition would normally then, if they were pressed, they'd maybe bomb the ball long.
Yeah,
keeper would recover it.
And Franco would go, light his cigar. Thank you very
Bring
much.
Bring it down.
Yeah. Just getting back to that walking around the pitch and all that.
X's and Y's.
Yeah, there's a 12-year-old boy came after me every time I would do that sort of stuff. And it was Marco Simeone.
A man!
Yes. Who would be, Fabio and Niels would practice corners, free kicks and penalties with him for half an hour.
Even at 12, they'd seen what that kid could become.
Yeah.
But none of them knew that you'd both end up scoring lots of goals in light blue in the south side of Glasgow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's extraordinary. There's another little kid doing all right and has done okay since. And I think that young Maldini was coming through while you were there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in contact with Paolo a lot.
A stylish man, great guy.
Great
guy. For anybody to try and understand the nature of this club that you star at and you still love that. Maldini might be their greatest ever achiever, their greatest ever player. And when he left, he'd fallen out with the ultras so much that he kind of booed away in his last position around the pitch because of a stance he'd taken. It's my point is, it's the most...
Ultras run a football club, you know that. I mean, I'm free tickets. I'm in close contact with the ultras. I was over for the Côte d'Ivoire Sud 50th anniversary 4 or 5 years ago.
Where we're going to celebrate the thing they celebrated with you in a second because you're a legend for many reasons.
Just getting back to Paolo. Paolo used to come in with me and Ray because he was in the same sort of shadow as I was.
From Cesare.
Cesare Baldini, very successful player in his own right at the football club.
European Cup winner with the Rossoneri.
Yeah, same position.
Yes.
Same position, so exactly the same thing.
With you and Tony.
Yeah. So Paolo came and we used to take a bit of training and he was learning his English and all that sort of stuff. But also to understand where I was coming, because he knew my background as well, and my dad, my father, and all that lot. Because Cesare would know my dad.
Yeah.
Cesare was in and around the football club then.
Yeah.
Not a great. I'm going to say a bad word. Great importance, but he's as an ex-player, he was there sort of stuff. Don't forget, Paolo was only 16 at the time, so he was sort of training with the first team. Ivani would be playing left back at the time. He would be a left-sided player. And then in the second season of the third season, and then Paolo would be coming into the team as a 17-year-old. So he was taking the same journey as I was. So, you know, he's an intelligent boy.
So right? there were things to share between you.
Absolutely, hundreds of stuff to share, you know.
And there wasn't a massive age difference. I mean, not a gigantic difference.
What, 4 or 5 years or something?
Per force, in a life like yours, described in Hitting the Mark, I hate this, but we have to skip. There are two things we can't leave Milan without talking about. The first is, before your maybe the greatest moment, is when you have to take on the hierarchy, the ownership, in order to be even treated.
Giuseppe Farina.
Farina, whether it's deliberately or those underneath him, are kind of treating you like somebody, well, he's lucky to be here. He'll have to take what he gets in terms of car and accommodation.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've got this great big asset. It could be brilliant for them. Yeah. And they're making you, it almost seems deliberately or else obstinately, unhappy because they fail to fulfil any of your living conditions.
Yeah. The contract.
Tell that story in your own way.
Well, I think it was the Duca di Milano, the hotel was called. It's a five-star hotel. I've got two kids under the age of two. One in a high chair, and it's fine dining.
Yeah, and you've got formal and Italian.
Yeah, and it's nappies. No disposable nappies back in the day.
We've all been through this. It's tough,
and it's probably the worst. They a five star hotel. What's the matter? What are you moaning at? You're staying at a five star hotel. You're getting this. I said, you don't understand. A Britishman, an Englishman's house is his castle.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so that's where I want to be. The goal, the Milan derby came pretty early because I got sent off in my first game in the Coppa Italia. So that automatically elevates you with a curve, right? So they've got this man, boom, and flattened this guy, knocked him out, whatever.
Headbutt.
Yeah, headbutt. Good old-fashioned Glasgow kiss. That's why I live in Glasgow. You've got the ultras that are jumping up and down and they're
loving it.
They've got their warrior.
He's one of us.
Attila is born, right?
Yeah.
And then 5 games in from that sending off, we have the Milan derby. The history of the Milan derby, as you know, Graham, is one of the greatest derbies globally. I'm going to say that the animosity, the hatred between the two sets of fans is...
They share a stadium, which isn't a happy thing.
No.
So you're going to hate each other.
Yeah.
They both won European Cups in the 60s, and our sponsors, Bet365, want to know exactly what it was like scoring that goal.
Yeah, but you've got Inter, who are at top of the tree, right there. They've got Rummenigge playing for them, and they've got Liam Brady, that's, you know, has had a successful stint in Italy. And they are the team, right? So... First and foremostly, Milan were coming back for irregular bettings or whatever you want to call it.
They've been relegated from misbehaviour.
So they're back through, they're back in, and they just established themselves. It's a really young side. You've got a young Massaro that comes through, a young Donadoni that's coming through, a young Ivani, a young
Tassotti,
Filippo Galli as well, Tassotti, young Baresi. And a young Maldini. So you've got a young side, a young Mark Haley, and you've got the Di Bartolome, mm-hmm. who's the experience, and you've got Ray, who's got the experience. So we're coming through, and we're sort of building something. We'd had a good start to the season. I'd scored 4 goals in the first 5 games, and I was up there. You know, everybody was writing about me. Some had an incident with a journalist up at Milanello.
Pinned into the wall, weren't you?
Yeah, pinned into the wall with Franco laughing his head off behind me and rabbling on at this Italian journalist. Sniggering, and I put him down.
I hope he's wearing.
I got a tap on my back from Ray and Franco. I put him down because he wrote a completely false story about everything. And it was the Gazzetta dello Sport, the big pink, the Bible.
World fit. Yeah. That's a great expression.
The Bible.
I hope this fellow was wearing brown trousers.
Oh, well, he was quite favourable after that incident. Yes. So it was just Franco's face when I...
Because you don't generally treat the Italian press that way, Italian legends.
No.
You might go to war with them, but it's silencio stampa. Yeah, yeah. Normally the attitude was just to not to talk to them, to take them by the scruff of the neck and hold them against the wall.
Against a rough cast wall, you know. So I got him literally on his toes against a rough cast wall, and I've got steam coming out of my ears, my head. I'm like that. So I'm in match mode.
Somebody's sent you off on this, because at that stage you're not reading Italian perfectly.
Yes, yeah.
So somebody said to you, Mark, look what you're saying, right?
Yeah. So this comes to the fore. Anyway, that gets sorted. Milan Derby comes around. Great occasion. I mean, it was about 92,000 crammed in to San Siro. And it was like all the planets had aligned itself for that day for me. Colabarti, ex-captain, jumped ship. You know, now
cross to the enemy.
Yeah, go cross to the enemy, and I'm playing up against him. You know, game starts well. You know, Altobelli, who's became a good friend of mine over by working for BN Sports. We always sit down and have a glass of wine and chat about that particular time, because Il Spilo was a great player.
World Cup final scorer.
Yeah, brilliant.
Famously.
Yeah. It was, similar sort of physique to me. He scores, Di Bartolome scores, and then we're coming up into the period of the game, second half, where it's nip and tuck. I think we win a ball back on the halfway line in a wider area on the right hand side, and a ball's knocked out to Pietro Palavirdis, who is a great player to play with. He hoiked this ball into the, I'm going to say, the edge of the box-ish, and I'm sort of got them all over this ball. I'm seeing it from a long way away. It's coming. What Colavarti did, he showed me his number. As soon as he showed, because when you're standing like that, he's seeing me all the time, and he got drawn to go to the ball. And as soon as he showed me his number, I was on, and I could not miss this ball.
See, that's your description. Yeah. Any normal human being would think this is a huge jump. It's very difficult. Once I get up there placing it, and you're I can't miss this.
Yeah. And Walter Zenger, the goalkeeper for Inter that day, I bumped into him a lot of times, and I actually said, I can't believe you actually tried to save that, you know, and take the making out of him, because it went like a bullet. It went in the top corner. But it was not a goal that I was unaccustomed to. I've done it a lot of times, youth level and all that sort of stuff.
It was a bigger goal than the Maracanã one, because the Maracanã, you're a little closer to the goal.
Yeah.
But in terms of the loft of the cross and it waiting there for a Mark Headley leap, there's some similarity at least.
Yeah, it is. That's something that I learned from my dad. You know, my dad, when I was young, would hang a ball off a line for me.
A washing line out in the garden?
Yeah, a washing line out in the garden to be able to jump across and jump, you know, and head the ball. And it's not about the neck, it's all about shoulder rotation and all that sort of stuff, and that's where you get the power from.
So your top half of your top body is twisting.
So it's all boom. It's all part and parcel.
You've automatically, as you're showing us, you've got both arms out here to balance you.
Yeah. So it's all coming from here, originally, through the shoulders and through the neck. And then a solid.
And there's even in the garden, the sit-ups that you're doing with your dad have helped you get that twist.
Well, they helped me get the elevation first and foremost.
Yeah.
We used to call it hang time.
Yeah.
You know, because once you see a defender's number, you're jumping up against him, and he is in, then elevating you even. You see Ronaldo do it.
You just get a little bump from his body.
And it just gives you...
As he tries to... You're up ahead. Yeah. And as he's going up, it just gives you that hand.
The elevation. Yeah.
And what ball are you using in the back garden when your dad's got that hand for old-fashioned leather heavy balls?
Yeah, it's not the ones that's all not with a lace. It's still a heavier ball. Anyway, that's the thing. But it was a static ball, so it was just me with the running. You know, the distance that you need to take off before you're heading the ball. Slight little things that you never even think about when you would teach a young person to
but when your glory day comes in San Siro, it does owe a little bit to the back garden and the washing line.
Absolutely, 100%. So that's what I'm saying. My dad made me the best he could, and then I took it from there. So the basics of being able to head a ball as a number nine. This is a movie, by the way. It's got to be.
I would say so.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Conor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I'm going to give you a little extra rule, which is for Baresi, because you don't look back, you don't live in the past, so you may not have seen. But we researched this a little bit. So I've gone and watched that goal a lot. Mm. And when the ball breaks, whether it's Franco that wins it, and I think it might be, he's given the press, it might be, but Franco continues his run, which is quite rare for him.
Yeah.
So as you get up and score, Franco, wearing, I think, three, he's skipping and jumping like a little leprechaun, and he's a serious
man. I'm standing there like that, and they're all hanging off me.
He's just doing a little jump as the stadium, the Rossoneri part of it goes mental. But he's like a little happy leprechaun because it had been, I think, 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years.
Since Milan had beaten Inter in a derby. Yeah. And it just goes absolutely great. I mean,
mental.
I don't know, the adrenaline or the...
Yeah, listen, you don't realise what you've done, right? You've scored a goal. We beat Inter. You know, we've been a really good side. Rummenigge, Liam Brady, as I said. And it's another tick. I've scored another goal. I'm 6 games into my career. I'm getting all the headlines. And I'm focusing on working with Niels, working with Fabio on a technique to be the better player every time. So I didn't ever pondered on that goal. Everybody tells you, see, when you finish your career as you're doing now, Graham, you just said to me the enormity of that goal, that only becomes relevant after the fact, right? So way down the line, my relationships with the old players, Massaro's and Donadoni's and Franco.
I love the way
and
you've
Maldon.
Kept in touch. Yeah. I respect that.
Well, Paolo's doing the same job as me as business development at okay. Milan when I was working in at Rangers. So we shared information, you know, different sort of stuff, because they were in not a good situation.
No.
So I was, you know, swapping stuff and all that sort of stuff. And we'd bring their legends over to play at Ibrox. And all that sort of stuff. So we kept in good contact. I went over to look at their museum because of what's happening at Ibrox. I wanted to develop. There's a building at the back of, you know, Emerson House, which has been knocked down. It's going to be a museum.
It's vital for any big club
with
history.
So I went over there to have a look at the museum and what they've done with the superstore. You know, basic 21st century.
Smart.
Doing your homework.
Yeah.
And with myself and Paolo and Franco, because Franco's English isn't never
no
been, yeah
no
but he was we had a great day, I must admit. We had a couple of laughs and some food and what have you. So it's great to go back over those things. And in that museum there was that special moment.
Well, not just in the museum, because the Curva Sud unfurled one of these. Yeah. They've done this painting and they unfurl it, and it's you with the leap. And it covers all of the Curva Sud.
Can I just say, I was doing a show for beIN Sport out in Qatar, and I sat with Ruud Gullit and a couple of other guests and a presenter. Right, I'm standing up against the big board, the big, big TV, right? And it flicks up, and it is that.
They're on.
Is it a TIFO or something?
It's a TIFO, yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't seen it, because I'm literally talking to the presenter.
That's not bad.
And they're all laughing. And I turn around and I say, whoa. And it's that picture.
With your leap and your half body above your man.
Mr. Colavati.
Colavati. It's a beautiful goal.
And that takes us to the next stage of the sit down with Farina.
Because I love the way you stood up then, because again, just like with the journalists, in Italy, there's a big hierarchy. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to call them pompous people in those days, but there definitely was a sense, don't poke our dignity. In Britain, we grew up where okay, there's a class system here, but you can give and take, whatever. Now, in Italy, that wasn't done. And what you do is like, I'm not taking this anymore.
Absolutely. I got that mood on.
So what happened?
I was getting earache from the missus.
All right.
So we're in a hotel, the kids are throwing
a big
food
motivator.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, am I scared of her or him? I'm scared. I'm more scared of her than him. Right? See, I don't know this guy for Adam. I mean, I'm at his football club. All I'm doing, I play for him, but I don't play for him. I've always played for supporters.
Oh, very
as a football
good.
Fan.
Very good.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm sat. I get Ray. I need an interpreter, right? I need somebody. But I know he speaks English. Right? So you picture this. He's based in South Africa because he's not allowed in Italy, right? So he's flying in for all
this is after the match fixing.
Yeah. So he's flying in, comes to the game, has his food, flies back the next day. So I said to him, I can't remember the sporting director, get me a meeting with him first thing in the morning before he flies back. He said, why? I said, that's for me. Right, I need to see him. So the meeting's arranged. We turn up at Via Tirati, myself and Ray. We walk into the boardroom after being kept waiting for about 50 minutes. We walk in and we sit down, and it's a big long table, and there's a big bookshelves with all the Milan books on it, history of the football club. And Farina sits right at the end of the table. He's got three guys sitting either side of him. He's got a guy standing at the back of him.
Show force.
Well, I'm thinking, is that all you bought? All right, so we sit down, and through his interpreter, the guy said, "I think great game yesterday, all the niceties and, you know, all that." And said, yeah, boom, 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 boom. I said, right, the reason I'm here, and I know he can speak English, right, the reason I'm here, I want a house for Ray, I want a car for me, and I want a car for Ray. Right, I want it by next Friday. Right, so if it's not here by next Friday, I'm gone. You're not fulfilling the contract, I'm away. He goes like that, he taps the guy that's standing up, and he walks down and he pulls this massive big book out. It's like the Milan Bible, it's an opus, big, massive, big book. Puts it down in front of me. So I open it up, and the guy, Mr. Farina, is saying, he said, if you want to be in this book, he said, you listen to what we do, on what we want, right? And I sort of went, slammed it too, and I stood up, and I, you know, nicely slid it back, but I threw it too hard, and it went all the way down, and it fell right in his lap, right? Right, without a word of a lie, I stood up and I said, if you want me to be in there, two cars, two houses by Friday. And I literally grabbed Ray by the scruff out of his chair and went straight through the door. Guess what? We had a house and two cars by Friday.
As you closed the door?
It sort of wobbled a bit. It came off. It came off because it was a massive big door, big solid thing. I mean, I'm going to say 8-9 feet. Massive. And it was one of them. I pushed the Ray through it and it
bosh.
Boosh. And it
was Mr. Wilkins generally a calm or more diplomatic?
I just went to Ray. How do you think that went?
Oh, it's beautiful. This is the way that great men of talent achieve more in their lives.
But that's me being honest with myself.
No, well, listen, you can't be cheated on a contract and then pushed around.
Yeah. Little did I know that the situation Farina was in at the time, because money was short, all that sort of stuff, and he was always
rather than an outright disrespect, it was cost cutting because they were in trouble. And round the corner was a fella called Berlusconi who was going to buy the club.
Yeah.
Again, because your life is so rich, some of my knowledge, although I followed Mark closely because he was a player I admired and who did me lots of damage, is in Hitting the Mark, which I urge you to buy because you'll enjoy it. All of this tone of voice, all of this honesty, all of these escapades as well as his talent, they're all in there. Now, I'm not going to ignore France, where you're a title winner, where you meet and work with Arsene Wenger, where possibly one of your most special footballing partnerships is with Glenn Hoddle. But this is where I self-inflict. Our socios are our members. They're our ultras, and they've been with us since 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. One of our most loyal, so I'm just going to read this out, Mark. Mm-hmm. Finlay McDonald. He knows me.
Yeah.
I know you'll want to skip over most of Mark's Rangers career. However, if you could ask him about a game at Pittodrie in December 1991, where he scored two crackers, Finlay's a blue nose, two crackers in the first half, assisted a McCoist peach, and also assisted the Don's second goal with a dreadful back pass and a 3-2 win for the Jurors. The linesman denied him his hat-trick, but he was the focus of everything about the Rangers play that night and well worth a watch on YouTube. There were so many classic Jurors versus Dons games in that era that this one is often overlooked. Also, did he know as soon as Walters crossed it for him earlier that year that he'd get the header? Finlay closes with saying, I can understand if you don't want to go there. And there's another one here that's really, really good, and it's from an Aberdeen fan, Robert McIntosh. In the lead-up, this is Robert's words, in the lead-up to May 1991, the title of the cider at Ibrox, was there any discussion about the clattering of Michael Watt? I don't know if you remember him. He was our goalkeeper, still on crutches. No offence. The clattering of Michael Watt early in there. I had to get something in there.
Completely deflated him, I think. Literally.
The clattering of Michael Watt early in the game. There can be no Aberdeen-filtered holier-than-thou attitude given Neil Cooper's infamous siding down of Charlie Nicholas before he'd even left the centre circle. But Robert says, it would be genuinely interesting to understand the mentality of the team, the tone of the team talk that day, and how a professional footballer approached the physical and the psychological preparation for that game at Ibrox. And a different question would be whether the same tackle in 2020 challenge in 2021 would result in a dismissal. So Robert and Finlay have asked those questions, Mark, and you pick away at them as you please.
I'll take you to that thing. Well, let's start at the beginning, 1990, which was a long season for me, because I'm coming off the back of that.
Bad injury.
Four operations, 2 years, in touch and go. A decision to move away from Monaco, leaving a place that had been a good place and a bad place for me. Mm-hmm. A lot of dark stuff. And 8 months of a lot of drinking, a lot of partying. All the stuff which you learn from, into an opportunity where Graham finally got me to come to Rangers, because Graham tried to get me two or three times to come. And our relationship goes back a long way.
Having played against him, Coventry, Liverpool, Sampdoria, Milan. Yeah,
absolutely. Good
he knows you inside out.
Really, really good friends to this day. I bumped into him just by sheer chance in 1990. He was staying at the Hotel de Paris with the chairman and a couple of the directors, watching, you know, the Scotland team play in and around Italy. And was just out with the kids, getting them an ice cream. And I bumped into him walking through the casino square. He said, "Oh, big man, how are you? Body, body, body." I said, "I know your predicament." He said, "How do you fancy coming to play for us?" I've just signed a new 4-year contract, so I've got 4 years to go. Anyway, I sleep on it. I'm still unsure. I go and see Wenger the next day. I explain what's happened, and he completely understood my situation. He said, "Mark," he said, we know you're going to be bigger and better. We've given you a 4-year contract, yeah. Low more money, everything tax free, more money." And he said, "I've just bought in George Weah, a young player, and I want him to be coming to play with you, because I was playing with Ramon Diaz, who, the Argentinian Maradona's partner." I said, "I really need to think about it." And he said, "I understand it, whether you need a change of environment, a change of look." But he said, "Our faith is totally with you, but whatever decision you make is what is good for us." And that's how he was with me. He was honest, straightforward. I went away, slept on it, and yeah, I phoned him and said, "I'm going to go." And he wished me all the very best. Little did I know that he would then be leaving and off on his travels to Japan. I went down to see Graham and I just said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you want to talk money?" I said, "No. I said, I'm coming. You deal with Dennis." So I went and joined Rangers for 1/5 of what I was getting paid there and getting taxed on that.
Literally, I mean, almost nobody in life voluntarily takes a pay cut. I'm talking about anybody in life voluntarily.
Yeah, 1/5 I took.
By a fifth.
Yeah.
And tax. To go from tax-free, if Henry's not following that, because not many of us live tax-free, it means you don't pay any tax. What you earn, you get. Yeah. Which... In life, it sets you up forever.
Yeah, yeah.
You rejected the sunshine, La Turbie, which is a beautiful place to train.
A lovely way of life, family life, completely different to the Milan life.
You're given peace and quiet in Monte Carlo.
Walking around. My wife then was with the kids, with Princess Caroline and her kids, knocking around with Prince Albert.
You and I have got a pal in common in Albert. Yeah, I've been to the palace twice to meet him.
Good guy. I made that decision to move. Getting onto the Aberdeen thing there, you know, that first season was a hard season. I thought it'd be 12 games before I was up and running, and I was actually, I'm going to say 22 games before everything became natural. Everything comes a natural element of playing a game of football. That's what my dad said, right? You know, once you've got that natural feel, I don't have to make this run, you do it naturally. I had that all come in. It was like boom. In one game, I can't remember what the game was, but it must be 20 odd games in. So the frustration,
it took double the time you imagine it would. Yeah. But when it clicks, it just goes bash.
Boom! It's like pure clarity. It's like the pitch is there.
You describe it well. Yeah.
And I think the frustration a certain number of the East Enclosure had, myself playing with Morris. We talked about Morris before. Morris was a great player coming back from France, but he was drift out to the left wing, drift out to the right wing. Where I was always leading through the middle. So leading through the middle, you either have to have two good runners from midfield or you have to have a partner. And Morris needed to stay there. But he liked to, you know, adventure, as you said, and be involved. A twist of fate, I think. Morris actually dislocated his shoulder at Pittodrie, throwing a load of mud into the floor because he missed a chance and threw his own shoulder out.
It's the magic of Pittodrie.
Alistair comes into the side. Who's been on the bench watching. Alistair's not stupid, he's making jokes. He's a very intelligent boy. And straight away, it was one of them. You know, it was that once-in-a-lifetime partnership at one of the greatest institutions in Scottish football. They just went from strength to strength to strength. You know, Alistair wins a couple of European Golden Boots. So he now is fulfilling his potential, as Graham was frustrated with, because he's, you know, the 20s and 20... As soon as I was at the club, I saw this guy could be 30s, high 30s, 40 goals a season. And I think Graham saw the same thing. And that's, you know, the frustration that Graham had, because Graham was all about maximum potential.
Yeah. But he as well as somebody who's a friend of this podcast, he's been on the podcast, I find him a person I can rely on. Apart from the winning mentality he was born with and knocking on the door at Spurs when Bill Nicholson was manager at age 18, why am I not playing? But he's been to Italy, where the seriousness was something that Costi isn't known for.
Yeah, yeah.
He's patently not the
happy lad fella,
because the brain is going, and his brain about being in the right place or anticipating a mistake is excellent. But then Graham just got pissed off that they had slightly different views about what was potential. Important, how to realise potential.
And maximise your potential. And if you're maximising your potential, you're making this job easier, Graham's job easier.
Much.
Yeah, and it makes the whole team's job a lot easier. So if everybody maximises throughout the team,
things become
it becomes
easier.
A joy.
Yeah. Through that difficult season, so halfway through, it's clicking for you.
The penny actually drops. I've gone from 12 stone 3. I arrived at 12 stone 3, went to 13 stone 10 to survive the physical side of
it. It was so much more physical.
Yeah, and I just went on the weights, beefed up, and I put a stone and a half on.
That's significant.
Yeah.
Did that alter your speed in any way?
More power. Yeah. I had more power.
So the acceleration.
I had more dynamic energy. We run forward to the last game. Well, we were four games out. We should have been winning the league three games to go at Motherwell. We had a horrendous result. We get beat 3, and then we draw the next game. And so it comes down to 1990, Ibrox, last game of the season. Your team, Aberdeen...
We only have to draw.
You only have to draw. And you should have been 1-0 up within the first 15 minutes of the game.
Hans Hillhouse.
Yes, had a belter.
The pain of... It was hard to watch the 4 or 5 years after Alex Ferguson left not only become difficult, but the power just shift. Mm-hmm. And therefore, losing was bad, but losing at Ibrox was worse, because it was symbolic of...
What it was, where Scottish football was there.
And where it was going to go.
So... As I say, the last game of the season, it's Ibrox is jam-packed, but it's being refurbed and all that sort of stuff. So Aberdeen were getting changed in a porter cabin, right, underneath the main stand. And the main stand was jumping. I mean, it was bouncing. As I say, I never looked at a team sheet ever. Because you're coming from different ends underneath the stadium, into the tunnel, and you're standing there. So always at the back of the... Last, I tried to be last on the pitch. I've got Gary Stevens in front of me, and I'm looking over at their team. Our team talk was very short. It was, it was all motivated. Goffey'd had his word. John Brown had his word. I was fired up, down to the bare bones, with players in certain positions. So we was up against it, So nothing more than I'm going to say 100% from everybody would get us through this. And I'm standing in Ferguson's, bouncing the ball and throwing the ball at the people, hitting Aberdeen players on the back of the head and, winding people up. And I'm sort of looking down and there's this young goalkeeper. And I thought he was a mascot. He looked that young. I mean, he was that fresh.
Very boyish.
And I went to Gary Stevens, said, 10 minutes, if you can get to the byline in the first 10 minutes, hang one up. And I want to see what's going to happen, because I wanted to see what the two centre-halves would do in a reaction if I could get close to the goalkeeper. Gary gets there, and Gary's crossing was awful. He's always got snow on it. Always got snow on it. So it's ideal. And this young boy makes the first mistake of the game. He comes for this. He should have left it for his centre-halves to head it. So he comes and he wants the confidence to be able to come. And he opens himself right up to take a high ball. And I'm between the two centre-halves. And all I'm going to do is knock every piece of wind out of this young boy. And I caught him too well, actually. I caught him with an elbow right under his armpit and literally flattened his lung, basically. And he could, as he was going down, he could hear, whoo, it's all coming out of him, right? And he hits the floor, and he's boom, and Copeland Road's gone, whoa, yes. Wainstown's gone, yeah. Whoa. And the two centre halves, right? They sort of go, don't come over to me. They look at the young boy on the floor, and from that moment, I knew the game was ours. It was Brian Irvine and Alex.
Big Alex.
And every time I see Alex, I say, thanks for making me look like Pelle that day. You really did. And the first goal was a Mark Walters cross, hoik into the box, great falling over cross. And Alex did the same thing as Colavati, showed me his number, and you know, the rest is history, as they say.
I wonder if that had been you in the tunnel, because my opinion is that part of the early miss, part of the way in which my team, just from the outside, just as a fan, didn't react with fieriness on the pitch.
Yeah.
It might not intimidate you had you been playing in red that day, but Ibrox in full throttle, you need to be super strong mentally as well as a good player.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that had been you in red, in any stadium, not just Ibrox, but not playing for Rangers, and the ball had been knocked off your head in the tunnel.
That's the name of the game. You have to intimidate the player you're playing up against. If you can win that battle before you're even on the pitch, then you're ahead of the game.
The way we want to close, I want to close on glory. Now, you should have played in a European Cup final. It would have been the first Champions League final, really.
Yeah.
Our sponsors, Bet365, also ask, it's a good question, this. Which was more satisfying, your goal at Elland Road in the Battle of Britain or your sumptuous cross for Ali McCoist that effectively wrapped it up? They asked, Mark's known for a lot of assists for Coisty, but most would have been headers knocked down, and that cross was Davy Cooper-esque.
That was Coventry City, and that's where it all started. I get greatest pleasure out of the second goal. The first goal I scored against, I scored a goal like that at Motherwell, like 3 games before that, into the other corner. Not so much ferocity, but the same sort of pop right into the far corner. What typified that goal was what Rangers was all about. Brilliant goalkeeper, right? Great back four, three creative, great midfield players, and two guys that could score goals or create goals for each other for fun. We were under the cosh there. Don't forget the Leeds United side that was there. It was the Strachan, Gary McAllister, Cantona's. You've got all these Tony DiRigo's. You've got all these players, and we're getting battered. We used to do that when we went up to Pretoria. We used to get battered and come away and win 1-0 or 2-0.
I know.
So we were capable of doing that, and we had that inner strength to know we were able to do that. So we're 1-0 up, similar sort of mirrored the Gary McAllister goal at Ibrox in the first leg, scored very early. I'm doing the same thing at Elland Road. We go 1-0 up, takes a bit of pressure off us, allows us to go boom and be solid, right, and to wind them and grind them.
Right.
And now in a situation where we're under the cosh, we're needing to get something, right? We're getting into the dilemmas of the game. 20 minutes to go, and it's a crucial period. So Cantona's probing, Gary Mack's probing, Strachan's probing. The ball comes to John Brown. He gets his foot in, blocks it, and I've literally come in. If you got a back four. Tony DiRigo was up the park. I drifted off the two centre-halves into an area, into the midfield area. And I was wanting the fullback to come, right? Because if we could get the ball out and get the ball in behind, I'll be away from him.
In behind Tony.
Yeah, this is back to Coventry days.
Yeah.
So John Brown wins it. He knocks the ball out to me. I flick it between my legs into Ian Durant, that's just standing slightly behind me. And all I do, I know I've got the fullback. So I spin right round into a massive area,
acres
of space. And I know Alistair's not going to support. I know Alistair's going to be away into the... He's going to stretch into the box. Jasper, Ian Durant, knocks the ball into the space because I know he would do. And I'm off, right? So if you ever look at the study of the goal, I'm not right on the left wing. I'm sort of come from the middle area. Now, my ideal run would have been to take the ball straight, but what I wanted to do, I wanted to isolate Alistair with one centre half. So taking the ball away from him, that meant that two centre halves was like that. Alistair was fighting for a position. I know Alistair was not the greatest header of the ball, so it had to be a world class cross. So
no argument. But you want to drag, you want to magnet.
So I'm taking another touch and I'm having a look. And I wanted to, I really wanted to deliver it probably two touches earlier. So he's coming in for a side foot finish. So I have another touch, centre half still stuck with his teammate. So I took another touch, and then another, and then the last touch, literally as far as I could go, had actually coaxed that first centre-half out of the way, which left Alistair one-on-one. And I just delivered this ball hard. So all Ali has to do is let it hit his head. If he's got the direction, it's going to go in. And that's what we did that day. And first person in the dressing room after that was Alex Ferguson. Yeah, because, you know, the rivalry where we had Manchester and Leeds and all that sort of stuff. And he came into the dressing room and he went, fantastic, guys. Him and Walter were really pally. He said, tonight's on me. We're all back in Manchester. He'd organised a big nightclub. All the Man United boys were there. And as I say, the rest is history.
I'm stunned by not the quality of the conversation, because we anticipated enjoying this. We anticipated revelling in a life well spent, always trying to be better today and next week than last week. You tell your story well in your book, Hitting the Mark, but for somebody who doesn't go back in his career and look at things, to be able to describe even a special goal that well is an art.
Yes.
It speaks about your football brain. But for my taste, I'm gonna break a habit of a lifetime. I can't believe that I'm going to say, I'm glad that you bumped into Graeme Souness in Casino Square. For many, many years, I wasn't.
Yes.
We're both clear about why.
Yes, yes.
But even though it was my team suffering in the latter part of that anecdote, the quality of that side you played in, the intelligence, the enjoyment we've had in sharing you talking about your life, Mark, has been exceptional.
As I say, can I say that after the Leeds and going into the group stages, you touched on it before, we should have gone to the cup final.
We should have gone
to the first Champions League inaugural group stage cup final. We should have gone. If not for the ugly side of football.
Whatever happened, you know, having talked about the Liverpool cinema, the red card against Bruges, there's a slight movement of your right arm towards the defender.
He's pushing him away. On the halfway line.
Yes,
got me in a headlock.
Yeah, and then there's a little right. But the truth is, Marseille were convicted of cheating in that era. Bernard Tapie, their owner at that stage, just died. Yeah. He went to prison.
Yeah.
They bought the French league. Yeah. And therefore, there will forever be a question mark over that.
Yeah.
When starring Deschamps and Desailly with Bolly, who you made a career out of monstering at England level, I think scored 3 or 4 and a 6-1 win
against Basel. 4 in one leg and another in another.
It's not bad going. But the truth is that you don't live in the past. You can't change what happened that season. You came within probably a goal, a win in the Velodrome, one goal, and you go through to the final.
Yeah, against Milan.
It wasn't to be, but it's been a life well spent. It's well told in this book. You've given us extraordinary entertainment. You're not just a born storyteller. Mm-hmm. Your attention of detail and your ability to transmit what happened to you is
Thank
rare.
You very much, Graham.
And therefore, our enjoyment has been huge. Back page this Christmas, just for all of you, have got The Immortals, which is a title for immediately after Mark's reign. But I'm going to say on the record now, Arrigo Sacchi, Berlusconi and The Immortals could not have done what they did without Attila hitting the mark to set the scene for what happened at Milan. Massive pleasure meeting you and listening to you.
Yeah.
You're an extremely good storyteller about a life well spent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining the big interview.
Yes. Hope you enjoy, guys.
Thank you for listening to the big interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Backpage. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.